Blackberry P2. Blackberry 8870. Blackberry Passport.
How many did you have? Seriously.
I had all of them. I still do.
Yeah, they're just... Buddy, you gotta
put them in a museum.
Yeah.
They're relics.
You're like, did you see how one of the Paul brothers made this like art out of old Game Boys?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to do with all your Blackberries. That would be a really nice birthday present for you, actually. That would have been a great gift for the birthday boy, is Blackberry-inspired art.
Yeah.
Would have been
good. What about one of those empty houses, mansions that they all bought in Kitchener that are still sitting there, I heard?
Who? The people from Blackberry?
Yeah, because when the stock was at an all-time high, they were all like multi-millionaires, and then the stock went to crap, and then they all...
What a place to buy in Kitchener.
Yeah. The region.
Well, more about what I always think of is the what if of Balsillie when he was at the top of the world, where he was like Canadian Bezos in trying to buy the Hamilton hockey team. You know, just like
we
Bezos
could all be,
yeah.
We can all be watching a game from the Cops Coliseum there, great arena.
Yeah, I used to date a girl whose mom was like a real executive up at old Blackberry, and I had an iPhone, and it was just like anytime you were around her, she would give you the spiel as to why Blackberry was better.
That's why you broke up.
Yeah, that was it. It wasn't because she dumped me, boo-hoo. It was totally because I decided because of her mom with the BlackBerry. No, I loved BlackBerries. They were great. They were really, really great. But I don't know. They really, really tripled, quadrupled down on the whole idea that they didn't need to innovate anything because it was like, oh, you're just a business person, so use our phone. And if you're not a business person, then get out. And I don't know. I guess it just didn't work. You should have got with the times, BlackBerry. Tough one. We're going to be listening to podcasts someday, and it's going to be like the modern-day version of Kodak film. You guys know that story at all? It's Kodak?
No. Kodak Black?
No. Yeah, but I thought you were going to
talk know about Kodak Black.
Black
and his affiliations with Antonio Brown right now, the Super Gremlins. But I look at what happened with that. And, well, like, just think about being kids. Everybody had Kodak, right? You went and you got it developed, and it was always Kodak Films. Kodak, Kodak, Kodak. It was a massive company. Same thing with BlackBerry. Didn't get with the times, and now Stewie has to use an iPhone like the rest of us. I was going to say, though, like, did you actually have an active BlackBerry that went deactivated? For those of you that don't know, BlackBerry is now, like, officially deactivated. They don't have anything left. You can't use a BlackBerry anymore. You actually could use a BlackBerry up until, what, like, 4 days ago?
Two?
Okay.
Well, to be honest with you, it was only the ones that were on the old operating system. So I technically have one that's on an Android system, so it's still alive. I'm still hanging on. So I always tell everybody, I always tell everybody, if they had this phone 5 years ago, they would still be in business. I'm telling you, this BlackBerry Key 2, this is not an ad, by the way, but BlackBerry is
advertised for.
I know, I'm trying to. They're coming out with a new 5G one. They said the second quarter of 2021, but what year is it?
I know. It's just because, so when you text Stewie, he still uses WhatsApp. And the only people I talk to on WhatsApp are from different countries, like foreigners use WhatsApp. Like, that's it. It's like, it's a thing for. Or you meet people who immigrate to this country and they use WhatsApp with one another because it's free so they can text people back home, and Stewie. And that's it. It's like I just have people from other countries and Stewie on his BlackBerry in my WhatsApp, which sometimes I can rudely forget to check because I like don't even have notifications synced up to my WhatsApp. And then every once in a while I go in there and there's like a old Stewie face swap that he put me on. That's very, very rude. That's why I've decided like I'm just going to start screenshotting you on television a lot. I screenshotted one yesterday. I figured you'd like the Instagram post that I put you today, the tweet, you cutting a rug on your show. You just having a little dance. It's a good one. I do love it. So yeah, happy birthday to Anthony Stewart, RIP to BlackBerry.
Thank you.
So let's start with this. You're friends with everybody. Everybody likes you. You're one of those guys. What did you think about Hyman and his best friends in that game, and Hyman basically treating that game like a scrimmage and not hitting anybody? I guess Hyman thought that all the other Leafs were in the non-contact jerseys last night.
Well, I think that was just sort of a microcosm of how everyone sort of feels about playing in front of no fans, right? They're not necessarily taking it serious, but you have to find a way to get some emotion. So happiness and friendliness is an emotion, I guess. But again, that just shows how, you know, how these friendships he developed over the years. And he was a popular teammate with this Toronto Maple Leafs team. So I think for him, you know, this one was probably a write-off. There was no Connor McDavid. The team's been struggling, you know, losers now of, what is it, 11 of the last 13. So I think they were out here, you know, let's get in here, try to get a couple points, maybe get an assist and an apple and get out of here and get to the next game and start playing the U.S. and in front of some fans. But it's tough. I was talking to Jennifer Botterill last night just saying, like, does it feel like a scrimmage or a preseason game? And she's like, yeah, because there's no fans. I'm like, oh, yeah. And it just brought me back to when I was a player playing in Atlanta, and we had some fans, some games with 2,500. We had one game with 400 fans, and it's tough. You can hear a pin drop. I'm telling you, yeah, it was a school
400?
Game. 400 fans. And I was telling the story last night, like, I'm skating by, like, making eye contact with fans. You know how awkward it is when there's a fan just literally staring at you in the face through your soul? You're coming back, skating back up the ice, and they're looking at you, and they're eating their popcorn. You know that painting? It's looking like a painting in a museum that just stares at you. Like, it's very, very weird. It's very, very eerie. So I can understand how tough it is to get up for these type of games.
Well, welcome to the world of playing women's hockey. 400 fans would have been great. I'd be in for 400 fans. No, just kidding. In all seriousness, though, do you worry about how it's going to transfer back to Leafs are going to go down, play in the States with some fans, which will be great. But are we anticipating these Canada games to be like this? And is that going to be an issue come playoff time when they, you know, they need to be getting up for big games, but they're treating some of these like as you said, shinny or scrimmages?
Well, if we continue to stay in this together, all together, I think, you know, hopefully we'll start getting some fans next month. But it's going to be tough to tell. It's going to be tough to tell when they're going to start playing in front of fans. And I can understand how tough that could be going from Canada to U.S. and playing in front and not. So those mixed emotions and energy levels can definitely affect your game. But at the end of the day, these guys are professionals and you have to do a job. So whether there's, you know, 600 like Atlanta or, you know, 60,000 like in Ohio State, you have to come out and do your job. Because at the end of the year, if this team doesn't do what they need to do, they're not going to say, well, you know, 15 of those games we didn't play in front of fans, so that's why we didn't make the playoffs. No, heads will start rolling regardless if there's fans or not in the stands.
Yeah, I don't see very good hockey right now. I think the product is really tough. It's got to be difficult on the players. We discussed this earlier too, that there is a measure of, okay, that is what the money's for, go out there and compete, go out there and be badass. But, you know, there is a lot of what has happened lately that is probably draining for players as well. Mm-hmm. Changes in routines, added protocols, the fact that you've been off the ice for a really long time. I am trying to give them a bit of a break, but man, you go on this road trip, once that's done and you come back home, even if fans or no fans, there's no breaks here. Leafs got to start to bring it. We were talking about
continue
this.
To bring it.
Yeah, continue to bring it. I think that they're going to look fine on the road. I think they're going to look good on the road. So we were talking about this earlier, too, again, with Kiprios, is that Richie was a healthy scratch. He's your boy. He's gone, though, now, right? Like, even you would admit it. Like, you love Nick Richie. He's your favorite Toronto Maple Leafs player. You backed him from the start. You said he was going to be a borderline all-star. Sens were going to make the playoffs, and Nick Richie was going to be a borderline all-star.
MVP.
You know, you couldn't have been more wrong about either one of them. It's a miracle. It's a miracle that, you know, we still have you on to give these takes. But would you like to say that it's time to give up on your boy Nick Richie or what?
Well, I think you're talking about Tony Stewart, the race car driver, and I know we can all get – I know how it's easily that we can get mistaken for each other, but
– Yeah,
it's just tough because this is the wrong market to sort of come in and sign that contract that you did for 2 years and not really perform. And I think it was Justin Bourne last night just basically said, this guy's, it's done. And it's frustrating because he's a good kid. You know, he had a decent career, but it just is not working in Toronto. And I think what sort of makes it even worse now is you got Mikheyev coming back off the shelf and playing at a high level. And he's coming in looking like, you know, if he keeps playing like the way he's doing, there's the conversation is going to be, he's like, you know, how do we not get this guy into the top six? So there's that competition, right? So I think with Mikheyev doing well, Bunting doing well, Kasha and Kampf all playing their role, I think it just puts that microscope shifting on Nick Ritchie. And I think for him, you know, you're coming into Toronto, it's your hometown, you want to do so much, you want to put up points, and when you get behind the eight ball, you just try to do too much. And I just think for him, it's just not working out. You got to find your role, and that's the toughest thing. I went through it as a player. I could not find a role, you know, within a team or within a lineup. So that's why you're sort of going up and down. So I think now he's going to probably have to sit for a couple games and get back in there. But, you know, having this competition is a good thing to have with this group.
Yeah, I just think that on a normal team that isn't super capped out and in a different market, he probably gets to find his footing a little bit more. He's not as big of a center of attention, but Leafs are capped out. Everybody, I've said before that everybody in the city knows what every single one of the Toronto Maple Leafs players makes. That's the facts. They might as well put their cap number on the back of their uniforms because people know that as more than what their actual number is on the ice, right?
But like, what do you do then? What's the solution?
You dump them for whatever you can get because you have Kyle Clifford in the organization. You can go out and get somebody that brings Josh some physicality. Hosang. Right. You can – well, no, but that's different things though, right? Like, and I agree. Like Hosang maybe at some point does get a crack. But to me, I'm in the Bourne camp of that's just a different version of what you had in Galchenyuk last year. And so I don't want to necessarily be leaning on Hosang, even if he is a good rebound candidate, to be like one of your playoff guys. I think with Ritchie, they missed. And that's okay because Dubas hit on a bunch of other things. It'd be a bigger deal if he had missed on Kampf and Kasha was hurt and Bunting was scoring half of the goals that he has. But right now, it's okay. You have the luxury. It's actually a testament to how good of an offseason Kyle Dubas had that they can afford to just dump Nick Ritchie and get nothing in return. But at this point, yes, the cap space is more valuable to you. The lack of the distraction is more valuable to you. I think that you just move on. Last one on the Leafs, for me anyways, is, boy, that number, that really struck one last night. Everybody knows Mitch Marner doesn't score goals on the power play, but 100 games! 100! 100! 100! A century! 100! 100 games without a power play goal! My God! How do you continue this? This is a farce! You gotta get this guy out of here! Like, what are we doing, Stewie? How could you put this guy running him out on power play? What, 100 games? Here's what I guarantee, and I don't even believe this is a hot take. Anthony Stewart, 100 games on Leafs power play? You're getting a goal! One's going off your ass! Something, buddy! Like, of course it is! You're getting a goal in 100! My goodness! Embarrassing! No more PP1! What's the case even against?
Well, okay, thank you for that. But I did have 5 power play goals 1 year.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard, but that's not his role. It's not his role. And you were sitting here talking about, you know, a power play that's the top in the league, and his job is to facilitate. Yeah, so yeah, do you want him shooting a little bit more? Yeah, because that now creates another option, and it now, you know, messes up the scheme for the penalty kill too. But for him, it's facilitator. It's him coming down the pipe, making those cross-seam passes, finding Matthews, you know, looking for Nylander, shooting for sticks and redirect. So, you know, it's almost like a, again, I'm going to try to tread into basketball here, but it's like when you see a guy shooting the three that's a, you know, 7'2" guy. So unless it's Barignani, you're going to be like, what are you doing shooting the three here right now? So that's not necessarily his role. So, yeah, would he like to have 10, 15 power play goals? Everybody would too, but for his role and his scheme and the setup, that's not his job. So, yeah, should he be working on a shot a little bit more to get a little bit harder, a little bit more accurate? Yeah, but again, I think we're comparing apples to oranges here and grasping at straws here because, again, he's having a great, great season, and again, we're not getting anybody out of here right now.
You can have a great season. No, it's not get him out of town in terms of not having him be a Toronto Maple Leaf anymore. It's get him off the top power play. Like, this is stupid, man. I don't care how good of a facilitator he is. Are you kidding me?
This is Hot Take Tuesday. This is Hot Take Tuesday.
It's 100 games.
We'll have a conversation about this
after. What's a hot take about that? Like, you could pass it a million times. I've been hearing about
Mitch Marner's
muffin shot.
Because it's the fact that this is Toronto. This is Toronto, and we're making a big deal about this. And we should, in any other market, nobody wouldn't even know that stat. Who's keeping track of that?
You're
sitting there. On your iMessage, sitting there doing the analytics, when your iPhone analytics saying, well, if he shot 6.62 more times a game on the power play, you would have 14 more goals. Again, the team's doing well. The power play's doing well. And what is it? Leave Mitch Marner alone.
No. Hey, listen, until I get on the Mitch Marner payroll like you, I'm not doing that. 100 games without a goal is outrageous. Yeah. That is outrageous for the power play. Like, I don't care, man. He's got a muffin shot. He tries to shoot it once in a while.
How many crossovers did Matthews have yesterday? What's that stat on that? I want to know that
stat.
How many times did John Tavares jump over the board as opposed to walking out the bench last night? I want to know that one.
Look, I'm not entertaining that. I don't like to do the whole analytics versus non-analytics thing. But
this
I'm
is not analytics.
I'm not going to have the guy who doesn't know which side of the phone goes to his ear come on here and track analytics. Yeah. Because, you know.
That was a bit. That was a bit.
I bet. Yeah. What do you mean a phone number? Get out of here analytics. All these.
He comes off the top rows. First thing he says, last night, nice BlackBerry, buds.
Yeah.
You were sitting on that one for 17 minutes.
All right, so maybe Mitch Marner could learn a little bit from the lessons that you teach youth in your daily life. And we wanted to talk a little bit about what's been going on with the youngins in, you know, with the shutdown. We had Dr. Simon Darnell on from University of Toronto a couple days ago just to talk about some of the studies of youth dropping out of participation because of the pandemic. I know you work a lot with kids. What are you seeing in terms of the effect that another lockdown has and maybe in the growth and progression of hockey right now with the pandemic?
It's tough and it's so frustrating. And again, I have a great connection to these kids. Some of them I've been coaching for the last 7 years. And I try to equate it to how it was for me. If I was going through this right now, there's no way I'd be a first-round OHL pick or NHL pick because it's just so mentally draining to be able to train for 2 months or 3 months and then have to take a break and stay focused doing the online training. And, you know, I'm getting messages from kids saying, yo, Stewie, what's the plan, bro? Where are we going? Right? Because like last year, you know, I was the guy running away from bylaw, coming off the pond hockey with my Stewart hockey bag, and they're, hey, come back here, we got to issue your ticket because you want to go above and beyond for these kids because just the work that they're putting in for the last couple of years. So it's frustrating because, you know, some of these kids that I'm coaching now are going into their OHL draft year. You just feel so bad for them because they're sitting down now for who knows how long. So, you know, there are some showcase games. There's some practicing you can do online, but you cannot mimic the real thing of being on the ice every single day. Some of these kids before the pandemic have been on the ice 10 months, 11 months out of the year, 2-3 hours a day. So to go from that to not being on the ice at all, I would not know what I would do at that age. So you really, really feel for the kids, and let's hopefully that they can get back soon in a safe manner as well.
Yeah, it's awful.
What can parents be doing? Like, it's tough because we have a lot of parents, obviously, that listen to the show and that text in and they're disappointed or they're frustrated. Is there, like, any advice you could give to kids or to parents that are going through it right now? Again, you know, online learning, their kids are athletes and they're not able to be out there. Like, any positivity or suggestions on, like, how to keep the kids inspired and motivated right now?
Well, it's funny now because I was usually the person saying, hey, keep it down. I got to do a radio interview. But now that my three kids are doing online school and they're looking at me, daddy, saying, keep it down. I'm doing my school. So it's very, very frustrating. But, you know, you look at it, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I wasn't able to go on the ice every single day. So I'd be playing ball hockey. I'd be playing roller hockey. I'd be playing pond hockey. There's a lot of ponds that are open right now, outdoor rinks. Get outside. I, for one, you know, have to take vitamin D supplements because I'm inside on a screen all day. So take this opportunity to sort of be outside in the elements, going skiing, trying different outdoor sports. But there's no right answer. There's no right answer. I know the parents are very, very upset. And, you know, they're sort of, you know, questioning the leadership right now. But again, this is a pandemic. And, you know, I know sports is part of the equation, whether it's big or small, but there's other issues at hand right now too. But I'm going through it as a parent. It's very, very frustrating, and you just do your best to try to manage on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, Dewey, again, stewarthockey.com.
Hockey you, quality. We've got to plug the charity. We're in the charity game now, hockeyquality.org.
You do it all. You really do it all, man. And yeah, you're a great ambassador for the sport. And yeah, I think that, you know, when you're talking about being on a screen all day, I believe it when you're really accessible to those kids and making yourself available too. And thanks for making yourself available to us, buddy. We always appreciate it, even if you have horrible, horrible takes.
All right.
We'll still have you on because you're a good guy. See ya.
Thanks a lot. This one's for Fabro. Go Leafs, go.
Yeah.
Happy belated birthday. We didn't sing for him, guys.
Yeah, we didn't sing.
You don't want, you don't want that. You don't want that from me. I had to take a little pause during that segment because I was having a coughing fit as well. So you really don't want that. Yeah. Well, sorry, Stewie. He got, I will remember you.
Mattered. You did what mattered, which was dunking on him, which is the best. He's the best guy to dunk on. Always. Yeah. So good to dunk on Stewie.
Him and Colby.
I like the hockey guest segment sometimes where, you know, I'm just in the cut, right? Like I'm just laying in the weeds waiting for a chance to strike. It's like, you know, come at Kipper with a, so Kosh is good now, or come at Stewie with a, you can't use the calculator app on your phone to dial someone. But all right. This is a tiny NBA one that just came up. Gerald Green, who has been on the Rockets coaching staff this year, is leaving the coaching staff to go play in the G League. He's unretiring.
What?
Lame.
Yeah, that's per Shams just now. I'm honestly surprised
how old it took
this long. When you see like when you see Lance Stephenson coming back and Joe Johnson and stuff like that.
No.
Gerald Green's only 35.
No one gets themselves to Lance Stephenson. Lance Stephenson is money. Lance Stephenson is good. 20 and a quarter. Buzzer beater step back threes. Lance Stephenson might be one of the 50 best players in the NBA. It's like he's so good.
Sure.
He's so good. Lance Stephenson, how was he out of the NBA? Like, what happened? There's a conspiracy. We did the Carmelo Anthony conspiracy of how they kept him out of the league for a year. I want the full expose on how Lance Stephenson was not in the NBA. Lance Stephenson, absolute money. Imagine being a Knicks fan, having to watch Lance Stephenson, local guy, just do this. Lance. I loved it.
And he's only 31, so he's four years younger than Gerald Green. Maybe a little more runway there. But
conspiracy.
Look, he went G League, Grand Rapids Gold legend, Lance Stephenson. he's been all over the place. He played in China for the last couple of years.
Conspiracy.
Cool to see. I don't know that Gerald Green's going to get all the way back, but would it surprise anyone if he's on the Houston Rockets roster like tomorrow? Probably not. We're going to take a break. Ready. We're going to talk about some more serious NBA stuff with Bobby Marks, ESPN front office insider. On the other side of that Lance Stephenson game was Kyrie Irving's season debut. We'll talk to Bobby about that, Zion Williamson, a whole bunch more. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good morning. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. You can find them on their socials at J.D. Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar. The show at Fan 590 and the Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Last night, big NBA night, 11 games. Not the most fruitful from our wake and rake perspective, but big win for the Raptors, 117-111 over the Milwaukee Bucks. More nationally, the story, I know we just talked about Lance Stephenson, but the story was the debut of Kyrie Irving. The Nets beat the Pacers 129-121. Kyrie Irving played 32 minutes and starting lineup right away, 22 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and the Nets win his minutes by 16. JD, did you get to check out much of that game?
I watched literally highlights. That was it. There was too much Toronto stuff. I didn't end up watching it. But I like, again, to me, it's like Lance Stephenson stole the show. It was the Lance Stephenson show. And I've always been a fan of Born Ready. I've always loved Lance Stephenson. I love the antics. I like his style of game. Lance Stephenson's always been a guy that has like a different style than a lot of other players. He's got sort of that, like, I grew up with like N1 mixtapes as a huge influence of my game. He's never really cared what people have thought about him. I love them. I thought, yes, it's great having him back in the league. And at 31 years old, I did sort of wonder why, you know, we didn't, whether he has maybe a little bit of a shelf life in a career. The only thing is with Lance Stephenson is he's highly volatile. So who knows? But either way, that was nice. That stole the Kyrie Irving thunder for me last night, even though, like, Kyrie is Kyrie. I expect him to be that. I don't think that skill set really atrophies. I think he is one of the most talented basketball players on the planet. And yeah, it just, to me, it became more about Lance and less about them. So I think it's going to be more of a settling in period for me once I start to really care about Kyrie and the Nets.
All right. You might not be alone, and Kyrie's got a heavy January ahead, but not a ton of games he's going to get to play in general. To help us sort through the Kyrie stuff and a lot going on at the national level in the NBA, ESPN front office insider Bobby Marks. Bobby, good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Bobby?
Good. Doing fine. Thanks.
What were your impressions of Kyrie's debut last night? Obviously, he comes in, looks a little shaky out of the gate, but pretty strong numbers overall. The Nets look good with him out there. How are you feeling about where Kyrie's going to fit with this Nets team, the odd time he's able to play?
Yeah, I don't think they would have won the game in Indiana without him, to be honest with you. I think this Brooklyn team has certainly struggled since they've returned from L.A. I don't know if it's just a matter of maybe you have too many players now instead of you only had eight to play with. You know, the Durant Harden fix. I thought he looked really good in the second half. I did. I thought he gave him a spark when he needed it. You know, it's you know, especially for a guy who hasn't, you know, played in an NBA game since what, that Milwaukee series when he got hurt. And you know, now the question is that what does this Brooklyn team look like tomorrow? Tomorrow against Milwaukee when you don't have Kyrie Irving. That's going to be the big thing for me. I think they're, you know, defensively, there's a lot of questions with Brooklyn, but I thought all in all for his first game, I thought he looked really good. I thought there was a comfort level for him. I think the big question will be, you know, like we saw last year, is when we get into some of these really close games, minute left, tie game, who's taking the shot? You know, is it Durant? Is it Irving? Because there's still not enough probably body of work. What do we have, 15 games with these three players to figure that out?
So go ahead, Blake.
Oh, just how difficult is this going to be, like, from the team side to manage this, where he is in and out? Like, obviously Kyrie Irving is very, very good at basketball. No one's doubting that. No one is doubting that he's going to help this team score points when he's available. But how difficult is this from the team side?
Yeah, I mean, at least there's, you know, they've got 40 games of it already. So I think it's a matter of, does Patty Mills come off the bench? Does Patty Mills go into the starting lineup here? I think you just manage it, right? I think it's a little bit different than if Kyrie would have just, you know, this is mid-April and it's the playoffs, and now we're just, you know, I think it's a distraction, you know, especially if you lose a game on the road and you can't play coming home. I don't see it as big of a – and, of course, if they lose some games here at home, people will make a lot to do with it here. But I think what Steve will do is he'll you know, figure out what's best here. You know, I think the easiest thing last night would have had him come off the bench, but he kind of just threw him into the fire here. So I'm not in that fraction of people thinking that it's going to be a distraction and that the Nets are going to be juggling lineups here. I just think that it's almost like you're getting a player in a trade, not giving up anything for him, but you only have him right now for road games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it'll be fine during the regular season. My bigger question mark will be how it manifests itself come the postseason, when it's going to be a lot of question marks about it if he remains unvaccinated and you're in a tight series where people are saying, how tough is it not having Kyrie? I don't know. I just feel like in those matchups, especially against a team like Milwaukee, let's just say in a conference finals, that those little slight edges, those could matter. But in terms of his future, Bobby, and maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves here.
Sure.
Like, I'm talking about playoffs and finals and all these different things with Kyrie. He's got that player option at the end of the year, and it's hard for me to envision him opting into it, given that he's turning 30 years old, and I'm guessing that there would still be an immense market for Kyrie Irving. He's got this relationship with Kevin Durant, though. Like, Durant stumps for him. Harden stumps for him. What do you think happens here at the end of the season when it comes to Kyrie Irving? Does he leave? Could he potentially be traded even ahead of the deadline, with the Nets knowing that maybe he doesn't have a long-term future in Brooklyn? Like, what happens with Kyrie? How does this story end in New York?
I think he actually opts in and they try to work out an extension. I think that's kind of
really
where we're seeing it. I don't see a market for him. You know, I mean, you guys look at the landscape this off season, and of course, you know, cap space isn't everything, but is it San Antonio, Orlando, Detroit, Memphis? I don't see a home for Kyrie Irving in any of those four spots. So, and I think if you're Brooklyn, you've got Durant, you've got Harden, that's another big question. Like, you're not just going to let the guy walk because you see kind of where they are without him. I don't think they are a championship level team with Irving not there. And I think we'll learn a lot over the next four months here. And I think it'll be interesting if eventually New York, relaxes their vaccination rules. You know, that's certainly when we get into maybe the warmer season here, that certainly could change. You know, certainly you have a new mayor there. So there's a lot to figure out, but I thought it was a good start, the win in Indiana. But yeah, do I think there's a trade out for them? I don't think they brought him back to showcase him for a trade at the deadline here. I think even if he did not return, I don't think Brooklyn was intent on moving him, and we're basically going to roll the dice and hopefully he would have come back in mid March or April there.
Yeah, what I find fascinating about him is like, even the idea of bringing him to, because I think a lot of people have always thought the natural fit would be the Mavericks, right? Oh, go out and get a point guard, someone that can take a lot of the ball handling responsibilities off of Luka Doncic, who can be another star next to Luka Doncic. And I'm thinking, you know, the way this has gone for the Mavericks this year, is that all the eggs you want to put into a basket is in the Kyrie Irving? I don't know. I doubt it.
The scenario. I would, guys.
You would.
I would.
You would do that?
If I were them. Yeah, okay. I don't think Brooklyn would have any interest. You know, it's almost like the Ben Simmons situation. You know, with Simmons out, is three rotational players better than nothing, right? Like, if for Philly to get back, and the same with Brooklyn. But I don't think Brooklyn would have any interest getting, Dorian Finney-Smith and Tim Hardaway Jr. in that group if Irving had never come back. And if I was, this Maverick team is average. I mean, there's no. I mean, I know they had a good win in Golden State, but they're so far away from where the big three are out west here, and I think that's the type of deal that you would certainly entertain. I don't think Brooklyn would do it, and I don't think Dallas has the right pieces to do it.
You mentioned the Ben Simmons Philadelphia situation, which has been kind of parallel to the Kyrie situation. Is there any sense that that's closer to resolution? Like, we're a little over a month here away from the deadline. Philly's good, but maybe not, where they need to be or where they expect to be compared to Milwaukee and Brooklyn. Are you expecting that to pick up, or is Morey going to play this game of chicken through the deadline?
I just think it's a matter of what teams panic. I think Sacramento is pretty intriguing for me just because of where they are. Right now, they're out of the play-in here. A mediocre roster at best. And I think if Monty McNair, their GM, said to Daryl Morey, pick what you want from a roster, I think they'd probably get a deal done. But I think there's a lot that Daryl would probably pick from, whether it be Barnes, Halliburton, Fox, draft picks here. And I don't know if that's a little bit too rich if you are if you're Sacramento here. So it's hard for me to see another team out there. I know, it was reported that they're looking for a top 25 player, and I don't see a top 25 player. I think you're probably looking at those tier B type all-stars. And as I said, I think it's just a matter of kind of like who panics in the next 3 weeks, or is Philadelphia kind of content just waiting until the off season here? That's interesting. I think if they wait until the off season, I think they're probably a team that loses in the first round. I think that's just the reality of kind of where the Eastern Conference is.
Bobby, I don't know how the Sixers can afford to not move Ben Simmons, considering the shelf life of Joel Embiid. Like, that has to just be a massive part of this equation. I understand holding out. The only way I think it's acceptable for them to not just accept that, hey, we're not going to get a top 25 player, hey, we're going to have to take cents on the dollar for this guy, potentially, is if they really do believe that they can get in the mix for Zion. And this is sort of the way to pivot to this, I think, in some ways, is that if you're Daryl, can you try to think, okay, maybe for a place like New Orleans where no one wants to play, we can try to use the LSU chip with Ben Simmons and the, hey, this is a star power chip, this is a guy who's locked into a contract, we can potentially get into the Zion mix here? Because I don't know what the hell is going on with this. Maybe you can shed some insight. But when you're saying that a guy of Zion Williams' stature, when he looks the way that he does, and he has a broken foot, and now you're telling me that he can't even be around the team, he's got to go rehab in another place, I got all my detection systems up. I'm on high alert for this thing. I have to wonder at least if... if we're going to ever see Zion Williamson in another in a Pelicans jersey ever again.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, you know, and I think that's something that if I was, you know, Daryl Morey, I think I would probably lob in a call down to New Orleans and see what the availability of Zion Williamson is, and probably David Griffin would probably say he's not available right now. And but when will he become available? I mean, that's going to be the big thing, because these rookie contracts eventually expire. He's extension eligible this offseason. He'll be a restricted free agent in 2023, and he's been spent more time on the sidelines than on the court here. And I don't know if I'm content paying him $180 million over the next 5 years in an extension, especially, you know, I've dealt with broken foots before, you know, especially in Brooklyn with Brooke. You know, I didn't think Brooke would ever play, and eventually he came back and he turned out to be a pretty good player here. So I don't think, you know, we've seen the last of Zion Williamson here, but I just don't know when he gets back on the court. I don't think it's this year. And so it's going to have to be sometime next year.
So let's move on to the Raptors a little bit here. They're finally getting healthy and having their starters get some minutes together and building that chemistry, which has obviously been led by who we think is an all-star candidate, Fred VanVleet.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Raptors are better than people had expected this season?
I do. I mean, I love their starting five. I mean, like, roll them out, and I think they can compete with, you know, probably some of the teams up in the, you know, the echelon of the Eastern Conference. I think the concern would be the bench a little bit here. But you're right, when healthy, I mean, this team is, I think this team is really good. I think Nick has done a tremendous job, and Masai and that group, just navigating. I mean, just navigating everything this team has had to go through, certainly with COVID, no fans in the building, or limited fans in the building. And now, what are we, like, two games over 500 in that, I guess, in that 6-7 range. So I think, yeah, I think they're a playoff team. I think it'll be interesting when we get to the deadline here. You know, certainly the Dragic, you know, expiring contracts hanging over their heads. It's hard for me to think there's an imminent trade out there. I think maybe more of a buyout here. And if they're looking for more, a little bit more help, you know, from a bench standpoint here, but this is a good team. I mean, this is a good team. Are they Brooklyn and Milwaukee? Probably. No, they're not. But I think it's a good team. The root behind, I think there's a really good foundation in place with, you know, guys under contract for the next, you know, 2 or 3 years.
So they're in a bit of a weird spot where, you know, they're certainly not good enough, I don't think, to pull from the future to supplement this team this year. Like, you're probably not trading away a first with how long you've been kind of at a draft pick deficit. But in terms of addressing that depth, you know, they're bringing three centers off the bench, or three pseudo centers off the bench. How early do teams start talking about those kind of like roster balance or challenge trades, like, you know, a Malachi Flynn or a Chris Boucher for something that fits a little better? Are those ones that kind of fall into place after the big stuff falls, or is that something teams are talking about as early as 1 month out from the deadline?
Yeah, I think you're talking about, you know, I think it's in the mix as well as with some of the bigger things. And I think it's something that, probably when you get to February 10th or, you know, the day before, those are the deals that you're looking to do right there. The deals that, you know, when it's 1 o'clock and you got 2 hours left on the clock, because, you know, that's the best for our organization. That's the best deal that we're going to get. You know, if in the case of Chris, you know, he's a free agent. There's, you know, we think the price tag might be a little bit too rich. So what can we turn Chris in, or Malachi, who's, you know, in that rookie contract? So yeah, that's, I mean, you're having conversations like that now, but I think when you, from a deal standpoint, I think those are more of like a February 10 type deal.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. One more quick one before we let you go, Bobby. I saw you tweet about it last night. It's something I think you and I have kicked around a little bit before, but with all the talent we've seen come in on these hardship exemptions and some of these guys sticking and looking pretty good, or a Lance Stephenson last night, things like that, are we headed toward a bit of a roster expansion, like, permanently, do you think?
I think it's opened our eyes. I mean, we've had over, 150 guys on hardship on exceptions, and there's been some really good players here. And it's, you know, we're unfortunately capped, as you know, with, you know, 15 and then the two-way guys. And I think that's something the league will look at. I think it's interesting. I think a lot of teams are signing players to these exceptions because it doesn't count towards the luxury tax or it doesn't count towards team salary. They're still getting pay. And I think if there was a rule in place where that carried over till next year, I think teams would take advantage of it. But I think if all of a sudden you said, you know, to Toronto, you know what, those hardship guys that you sign are going to count towards your luxury tax, I don't know how many people would be signing these guys right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the position the Raptors are in, right? Like, they like DJ Wilson. He sticks. Sure. They have an open roster spot, but you're, like, $20 below the tax line right now, so you can't do that.
Stanley Johnson in L.A. You know, similar to Stanley Johnson in L.A. You know, Stanley Johnson on a hardship exception is great, but, hey, when it gets to the time when you got to sign him to a rest of the season or a 10-day that actually counts, you saw some hesitancy there.
Yeah, for sure. Bobby Marks, ESPN Front Office Insider. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, Bobby. You're welcome. Thanks.
Bobby Marks. So February 10th is the NBA trade deadline. So if you're looking for Raptors roster shuffling stuff, that's probably, you know, we're a little far away from that still. But I think we're at the point in the season now, and these guys have been back long enough that the important part is we know what they need to address, right? There's not that question mark of, is it this? Is it that? It's like, well, they need a little bit of bench guard depth. And they have, if they're not going to start one of these centers, they have center surplus to deal from, which is a funny thing to say because they've had such poor center play for a couple years. But it's like, yeah, you've got a million quality backup centers and no starting center. So
I don't know what the value of that is, though. I really don't know what the value of any of these centers are. Like, Kem Birch last year was available to anybody. Precious Achiuwa, at this moment in his career, it's very difficult for me to think that another organization would covet him to the point of giving you the type of asset where you as a developmental organization like the Raptors wouldn't just want to keep him and have, like, he's more valuable to you, I think, than he would be to some other organizations. So Boucher is sort of the one where maybe you can get, and he's kind of my Nick Ritchie, where I say I'm taking just about anything back that is of value to me for Boucher, even if that means that I'm just trying to reroute it somewhere and use that asset or piece or pick or whatever the hell it is, stapling it to something else to try and get the right depth in a different area.
Yeah, and there was a market for Boucher last year if they had wanted to go that route. And unfortunately, the way the timing with the deadline worked was right around the Raptors' COVID outbreak. And then obviously they were waiting for the Kyle domino to fall and all that stuff. But Boucher, he hasn't had as good a season this year as he had last year. But he's also an expiring contract, so it's with bird rights attached to him. So it's a little easier from a flexibility side to come up with ideas, at least.
Blake, if you're Morey, do you hold out Ben Simmons from a year of... Because Morey screwed up last year. We all acknowledge it, right? Like, that guy blew it. He should have traded for Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. Mr. Big Brain couldn't lose a deal, would have won an NBA championship, but he didn't lose a trade. Oh, Daryl Morey, beep boop, beep boop, calculators. you're God, Blake
Murphy.
You
sound like Stewie.
Yeah, you're God. Yeah, he blows it at the deadline. Should have had Kyle Lowry, could have had him for Tyrese Maxey, everybody wins. Instead, no, it loses to the Atlanta Hawks. I don't think that they win a championship this year. I don't think that they beat the Bucks. I don't know if they beat the Nets, but I think that they're a little short. They need something, and if Ben Simmons isn't going to come back, there's a big part of me that goes, yo, you got to make a trade, even if it does mean that you get a Buddy Hield and a tire. And I don't think Halliburton is a guy that the Kings want to move, but let's just say, for argument's sake, that it's Buddy Hield and another piece, because I don't know how Fox makes this. Whatever. They go get cents on the dollar for Ben Simmons, but it means you have a better chance around this version of Joel Embiid. Or, door number two, you have to have X percentage of a shot at being the lead chip for Zion Williamson with Ben Simmons at the forefront of your trade, knowing that you might be able to take advantage of New Orleans given their track record with stars and the fact that that is where the kid went to university.
I would go door number one. Joel Embiid is going to be 28 by the end of the season. Obviously, the book on him coming in was, hey, is he going to stay healthy? That kind of stuff. He is in what season? This is sixth season, probably five of them where he's at a top five level in the league in terms of how you impact games and, you know, just how dominant you are. You don't know. Like, obviously, I hope Joel Embiid is healthy like this for another 10 years and he's at this level, you might only have a small window with Embiid as an MVP caliber guy. I think if you can get two pieces that you can slot into your top eight in a playoff rotation, you move Ben Simmons. And it's maybe not fair value or whatever, but this is not the situation you are in is not maximized total roster value for eternity. It is win a championship when you have a generational talent in his prime. And at a certain point, you know, it sucks. You don't want to have to blink. You want to keep options open to move Simmons for something bigger. These things are always easier in the offseason. But you have a window here with Joel Embiid, and you don't know how long that window is going to be open. I'm moving quicker to try to win with Joel while he's at this borderline MVP level.
I think I'm with you. You know what's crazy is that Zion Williamson is one of my favorite prospects ever, and I didn't know a damn thing about Scottie Barnes coming out of Florida State. I don't think that there's any way that you could possibly trade Scottie Barnes for Zion, even with the position lead that the Raptors have at center, which is crazy to think about the value of both of those guys just an off season ago. Before we go, there's controversy on the show that we need to decide here.
So, yeah, it's been a long time since any of the three of us had the Oxcord for Oxcord Friday, to the extent that we all think it's our turn. I brought it up. My last one was November 5th. Ailish's last one was November 26th. JD's last one was December 3rd. Vic's been dominating it. We had Christmas and New Year's. Despite that, I think with the new year, the first Oxcord of the year, we do something new to decide the order here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you guys to pick a number between 1 and 100, and I'm going to do a random number generator on Excel to determine the order here. Ailish, I know what number you're picking. Yeah, 27. JD, you got a number?
Here's what I'm going to say. I recuse myself from this. I'm going to be a good team player. I'm going to let you guys have the numbers between the two of you to do this. Here's what I know. It shouldn't be Vic, and I just want to do nothing but watch Friday Night Lights today. that's all I want to do. I'm going to do a brand new version of I'm going to be back at work, quote-unquote, with another Take It or Leave It, so make sure that you follow me on Instagram because I've got another one of those videos coming out today. But after that, I don't want to be bothered with having to pick any songs. I just want you two to do it, and then I'm going to watch Coach Taylor and the Dillon Panthers try to get another Texas State Championship.
All right, so Ailish picked 27. I'm going to pick 70 for the sake of having a number further away from hers, and now I'm going to do random number generator, see who's
that
closer.
That seems rigged.
98 was the number.
Oh, so shocker.
So it's my Oxcord. Sorry.
Kelsey, please.
I videotaped it so that there's evidence of
okay,
how it works.
I trust you. Oh, yeah. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
You're not like that betting app.
It's my turn
The betting
anyway.
App that I was on that stole from me.
Oh, the truth comes
like
out. It's my turn anyway. See?
It
this
is.
A,
oh, okay, yeah. He knew. Yeah. He rigged it. Yep.
I didn't rig it. It's a random number generator. But November 5th was the last. It's been over 2 months since I had the Oxcord. So get ready to get sad. Okay. Everyone.
Yeah, can't wait to be emo on Friday.
Make sure you make the most of your baby Friday because it's going to be emo Friday.
Listen
tomorrow.
To happy music today. Yeah. Get yourselves ready. Boo.
Can't wait. Can't wait to find out the new Dutch screamo band from Blake.
Buddy, you're watching Friday Night Lights. I'm going to sneak a Crucifictorious song in there for you. See if you can recognize it.
There we go, See if I can pick it out.
Dylan's
all right.
finest Christian screamo band. All that's tomorrow. Yeah. Join us there. Love Follow it. Us on socials. Subscribe to the podcast. It's Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.